As is indicated at the top of the sheet, we're doing Perek Yud Aleph today. In the event that you brought a Chumash instead of a Navi, it's the Haftorah of Parshas Chukas. How's that for a break? We have a spare Navi if anyone wants. We have a spare Navi even if nobody wants. Ooh. Who is here? Fine for you. Well, maybe we just read a few weeks. Now it's on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, we're going to discuss the episode of Yiftach. As mentioned, this was the Haftorah to Parshas Chukos, nay, a few weeks ago. We'll start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. V'yiftach ha-Gilodi haya gibor chayil, v'hu ben ish zona, v'yolad Gilad es Yiftach. And Yiftach was from Gilad. Gilad is part of Menashe. It's on what is now the Jordanian side of the Yarden. And he was a gibor chayil, a great warrior, and he was the son of an isha zona. Traditionally, the normal translation of the word isha zona is a prostitute, a harlot, as we would say in Cincino English. Sounds nicer. Right? And that's the fact the way the Metzudas David understand the word zona. However, there's a lot of discussion as to other potential understandings. Anybody has a targum in their Navi? I happen to not have one. Right? What does it say?
Innkeeper.
An innkeeper. Right? They understand that she's... Where would that come from? Well, from the word mizonos. Right? She was either a baker or an innkeeper. She served food. That was the business she was in. It's interesting, by a more famous zona, Rachav HaZona, back in Yehoshua, similarly you have the split. It's an odd piece of... Here it says, it's a sub pundakisa. A pundak is a motel. So say, even in modern Hebrew, we use the word pundak to indicate a sort of motel. It's interesting, a surrogate mother in modern Hebrew is called an... Ein pundakit. I mean that she's just a motel for the baby to hang out for a few months. Just renting out space is basically what she's doing. Right? That is, while that's an interesting take on things, it's unclear why exactly the Navi would find it necessary to tell us his mother's profession. There are other opinions as well. For starters, probably the most interesting is the Rabbeinu Bachya. In Bamidbar, at the very end, it's number one on the source sheet, Ucho Basya Reshes Nachla. So this is discussing the Benos Tzlaflad. If you remember, the Benos Tzlaflad were all daughters of Tzlaflad. That's what they were called that. Tzlaflad had no sons. So therefore, Tzlaflad, when he passed on, when it came time to divide the land of Israel, it was unclear what to do with his land, because only sons were technically supposed to inherit, not daughters. So ultimately, the Benos Tzlaflad won, that they got to inherit the land of their father. However, as far as they were concerned, there was a limitation that was set on them. And what was that limitation? The very, very end of Bamidbar?
They
had to marry within the tribe, right? Because if what would happen, since usually sons inherit the father, if they would inherit their father's land, and then they would go and marry somebody outside of the tribe, they'd marry someone from Naphtali, their sons would be from the tribe of Naphtali, and their sons would get the land. Therefore, the tribe of Manasseh would lose land. Therefore, there was a rule that they had to marry within the tribe. That was a temporary ordinance. Afterwards, after that generation, girls who inherited land, etc., did not have to marry in the tribe. And in fact, land would transfer.
Did they ever marry? I mean, they were all the youngest, it was over 40.
They did marry. They all married and they had children. Right, according to the Gemara in Bava Basra, points out, as you correctly point out, that the youngest of the daughters had to be over 40. Because according to the opinion that Tzlaflad was actually the person we know as the Mekoshesh, the person who violated Shabbos and was put to death, that we understand happened at the very beginning of the 40 years in the desert. This is at the very end of the 40 years of the desert. Right? That means, as a bare minimum, the youngest had to be over 40. And they were all waiting to get married. So the Gemara sees that believing that is a good idea. And in fact, the Gemara comments, I think, that they did get married and have children afterwards. So, right. I mean, they weren't quadruplets or quintuplets. They were... things were different in those days. So let's look at the Rabbeinu Bachya. The whole Basar Reshes Nachla, Shiloh Haya Bein La'aviha. Right, again, the Chumash here is stressing, since there was no son, it was necessary for them to marry within the tribe. In order that the land did not move from one tribe to another. We tamze hayu haminag b'Yisrael b'basi reshes says tavor alze v'tirzali nasi l'shevet acher shekaron osa zona. So afterwards, when women were allowed to marry out afterwards. Right? Technically, if a woman from Asher would inherit land, she could marry somebody from Dan. That wouldn't be a problem. However, they called this woman a Zona. Because she was causing her father's family to lose part of their land. So Rabbeinu Bachri says, when we refer to Yiftach's mother as a Zona, we don't mean that she was literally a Zona. That wouldn't be nice. We don't mean that she was an innkeeper. That would be nice. Just wouldn't be relevant. But rather it means that this was one of the situations where somebody from a different tribe was about to pick up land from someplace else. Ki imo shel Yiftach hoisa bas ereshes nachla v'nises l'shevet acher. I'm not saying that she was really a Zona. And so too the Targum Yonason. Well, it's not really so too the Targum Yonason. The Targum Yonason agrees that it's not to be taken literally. But it,
yeah, where do you get that?
Oh, what?
Derived from the word Zona. Where do you get this?
So, that it would not seem to be the simple reading. I'll give you that. But Rabbeinu Bachya had this tradition that that's what it meant. Now also it would lead us to also understand a little bit why there was a schism, shall we say, between Yiftach and the rest of the family. Right? Reading on, let's go to Perek Bey, is Vatelad Eshas Gilad Bo Banim, Lo Banim. Vayigdalu b'nei ha'isha vayigarshu es Yiftach vayomaro lo simchal b'veis avinu ki ven isha acheres ata. So Yiftach's father marries another woman, seemingly from within the tribe, and they push out Yiftach. They said, sorry, no, you're from a different mother, you're not going to get part of our Nachla. So again, that would seem to fit a little bit at that point. The idea is that they're saying that, listen, you're from a different tribe, you're not one of ours, you're out of here. Right? So it's not that Rabbeinu Bachya came up with this off the top of his head. There was a certain amount of flow that works out well with this. There are other opinions as well. I mean, I think it's Barbanel is of the opinion that Yiftach's mother was a Pilegesh, a concubine. She was a half-wife. So therefore, that was the reason they were pushing him out, that he wasn't really a member of the family. Whatever it was, what matters is that Yiftach had a different mother than the other brothers, and Yiftach gets pushed out. Vayivrach Yiftach mifnei Echav, vayeshev eretz tov, vayisraktu el Yiftach anoshim reikim vayitzu imo. So Yiftach runs off to this place called the Eretz of Tov. We're not really sure what that is. Is that the name of the land? Is it the name of the person that was running the land? It's just generally a nice place, and it's called Tov. And he has a following of other misfits. They all seem to gather together. Vayimi yamim, vayilachmu b'nei Amon im Yisrael. And after a certain amount of time, the Bnei Amon attack Israel. Vayikasher nilchamu Bnei Amon im Yisrael vayechu zikne gilo kacha says Yiftach me'aretz tov. So here we have the pressure of a outside army coming. There's no leadership. You have Yiftach. Yiftach, as we said earlier, was a gibor chayil. Yiftach is somebody who is a warrior, and also he has somewhat of a following. Maybe they're not the most upstanding of individuals, but he can pull together an army at this point. It's interesting. These are the types of things that repeat themselves throughout Jewish history. In 1947, 1948, when we were fighting for our independence, a fair amount of arms, etc., was given to Israel by the mafia. And the Jewish mafia controlled the longshoremen at the docks, etc. And there was an arms embargo against Israel at the time. And being that the Jews controlled the mafia there, it seemed that accidentally a lot of the arms that were supposed to go to the Arabs fell off the boats, or accidentally were sent to Israel. And it seems that a fair amount of arms were gotten that way. It was very interesting, just to veer off a little bit. Philosophical question. So in the early 1970s, Meyer Lansky, who was a top member of the Jewish mob, was being pursued, and he wanted to make Aliyah. He wanted to go on a long return, and his request made it all the way to Golda Meir, who was the prime minister at the time, and she refused to let him in. Said, no mafia in Israel. So Lemaisa, that didn't work out the way she had hoped for it. Now, this mafia still made its way into Israel. That's a question, you know, in terms of the on the one hand, no, you don't want mafia in Israel. On the other hand, Hakaras HaTov, they were very helpful to Israel in their time of need. Interesting the question. So they go to Yiftach. They'd like him to help out here. So Yiftach says, I don't exactly have the warmest feelings to you people at this point. Pasuk Vav, Vayomru li Yiftach l'cho v'hayiso v'anu l'katzin v'lchama b'nei Ammon. Said, be our katzin, be our general. Help us fight against b'nei Ammon. Vayomru Yiftach l'zeh gilad, halo atem s'neisem osi, v'ati garshuni mi beis avi, madu abosam erai atok asher tzarechem. Wait a second, don't you hate me? Aren't you the people who threw me out of my father's house? Now all of a sudden you're in trouble. Now you want me to come help you? And the short answer is, yeah. Vayomu zigbegil yitachuchein ato shavnu elecho. This is true. We came back to you. Valachta imanu. And if you will go with us, v'nochamta b'vnei Amon, and you will fight against b'nei Amon, vayisalanu l'rosh l'chol yoshvei Gilad. If in fact we would like you to be in charge of us at this point and help us fight the war. I'm not just going to be the general here. Let's get this straight. In the event that I come back and fight this war and we win, I am in charge. I am the prime minister of Gilad. I am the man. Right? None of this, you need me, then you're going to bring me back in, and then when it's done, don't let the door hit you on the way out. If you're bringing me back, this is for good. So there's agreement. We swear that that is true. If you lead us into battle and you are victorious, you the man. Okay. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayelech Yiftach im ziknei Gilad. Vayosimu ha'am oso aleihem l'rosh l'katzin. Vayidaber Yiftach es kol devarav l'fnei Adonai b'mitzvah. So they go out to Mitzvah. Mitzvah is part of Gilad. Mitzvei Gilad. It comes up a lot in Nach. And all of the members of Gilad are there. And we have an agreement set up. And this agreement is that Yiftach is going to lead us into battle, and if he is victorious, he will take over. The end of the pasuk is a little unclear. Vayidaber Yiftach es kol devarav lifnei Hashem b'mitzvah. What are kol devarav? So there are two basic opinions among the Mefarshim. One is that this is the statement that there was a public proclamation of the agreement that was reached between the Ziknei Gilad and Yiftach. The second opinion is, no, and now he davened. Now that he was in charge and he was going to lead them into the activity, there was a need for tefillah because there was a war coming. There is a very famous saying, it's quoted by Rashi and Chumash, regarding Yiftach. Yiftach was by far not the greatest of our shoftim, of our leaders, right? He was a man who was sounds like a hooligan to a certain extent. And as we will see as the story goes on, he clearly was not a Talmud Chacham. However, the Gemara comments, and the Rashi quotes this, Yiftach b'doro k'shmuel b'doro, that Yiftach is the leader of his generation, just like Shmuel, who they said that Moshe Ba'aron, the Kohen of Shmuel, the Kore Shmo, that Shmuel was the same level as Moshe and Aharon combined. When a person, when you have a leader, you have to treat them the same way. Whether the guy's actually a Shmuel or whether the guy's a Yiftach, the leader of the generation deserves the same respect. Because there has to be a certain order to things. It's very interesting that in our circles less, but in other circles more, you'll hear people saying that, oh, what are we going to do now? There's no leadership. And we have to follow. Moshe Feinstein has passed on, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has passed on, etc. And what do we have now? There are no leaders. You know, therefore, there is definitely a push back. And we have this also. Rav Soloveitchik has become much more popular since he's died. Rav Soloveitchik, Shlomo Kalbach, a lot of people have been doing very well. The Babashi Rebbe we don't even talk about. And there's definitely...
We're not
sure. What? Could be just playing possum. Not long ago someone told me a line that was very sad. They had to put barbed wire around the Lubavitcher Rebbe's OL because he was getting death threats. that's not real, it's a joke. So there is definitely this movement that, you know, oh, the previous generation, the leaders that we had were so much greater, we have to divine somehow what they would do in this situation. And the answer is no. Yiftach v'dor, even if you're right, and the leaders of the previous generations were a bunch of Shmuels, and the leaders of this generation are a bunch of Yiftachs, we hope not, but still, you accept what you have, and this push, you know, among all parts of Judaism, to say, oh, you know, Rav Shach was so much greater, and Lubavitcher Rebbe, and Rav Soloveitchik, and Rav Moshe Feinstein. The rule in Judaism is you play the cards that you're dealt. You're not playing last game's cards. You know, this is it, right? For better or for worse, and that's part of what comes out of here. Yiftach v'daro k'shmuel v'daro. He would deserve the same respect that Shmuel, who clearly was a much greater man, deserved, because in his time he was the leader.
But on what scale, like, if you live in a community and you have a rabbi, you think there's a more novel rabbi in New York or in Israel, are you supposed to stay with the rabbi that's the leader in your community, or as long as you're using someone who's alive as the president?
So again, assuming yeah, so dealing only with living people now. I think that's the shift we're going to hear. So assuming everybody's alive. So I mean, everybody should have their own competent rabbi, right? Right. Again, part of the definition of competence is being able to speak. You know, right? Okay. Yeah, that's it. Right. You know, if you.
Yeah.
This is right. That's okay. In Breslov, they still give shlishi to the Rebbe. Nachman of Breslov has been dead for almost 200 years now. So the old line is, you know, yeah, shlishi. Let me see him do hagba once, and then I'll be impressed. Shlishi, just to sit there and say, oh, man, that's no trick. See him do hagba, then I'm in. But the idea is that everybody is supposed to have someone who you can come to with your issues, etc. There are times in life where you'll end up with an issue which is beyond the scope of the typical rabbi. Right? Whether it's you know, medical issues, whether it's very difficult theological issues, and for that, you know, there's always been a setup. Right? For example, in the times of the Gemara, right, you had every town had a Beis Din of three, and then the community would have the large area would have 23, and there was one Beis Din HaGadol of 71 that sat in Yerushalayim. And part of the issue was that there are sometimes, you know, most things can be handled on a local basis, but if you happen to have an issue that's that great, you know, the basin of three will tell you, we got to push this upstairs. You know, we got to go up a level. Hey, much as we have. We have our Supreme Court, we have our appeals court, you know. So too. Okay, so what's the first act that Yiftach does now that he is the Shofet? Perakud, Pasukud Beis. Yishlach Yiftach Malachim El Melech Bnei Amon Leimor Maliv Harach Ki Basa Eira Lirach Eimartzi. So he sends a messenger to the king of Amon. He says, what's your problem? What's between me and you that you're coming here to fight? You know, why don't you stay on your side of the border, I stay on my side of the border, we'll all live happily ever after. He tries diplomacy. Vayomar Melech Bnei Amon El Malachi Yiftach Mi Lakach Yisrael Sr. Ki Lakach Yisrael Srt Ba'aloso Mi Mitzrayim Mi Arnon Vad Yabok Vad Hayardein Vad Tahashiv Asem B'Shalom. Said, well, you see, I'd like to go back to the pre Kibush Aretz borders. Okay? Originally, we had the land from Arnon to Yabok to the Yardein. Right? When the Jews were entering Eretz Yisrael, they took over it. And we would like it back now. Right? That sounds a little bit familiar. Type of thing that plays itself out. You know, if we would just go back to the borders prior to the previous war, we'd be happy to let go, but you've stolen our lands, and we'd like the right of return, and we'd like the land back. We'd like our own state. So Yiftach answers. Vayomer lo, ko amar Yiftach, lo lakach Yisrael es eretz Moav es eretz b'nei Amon. No, that's not what happened. We didn't take Moav and Amon. Let's go. Let's repeat Parshas Chukas. This is why this is the Haftorah of Chukas, because this just runs through the whole story of the Parsha there, not the Paraduma part, the other part. So he said, we went over Yamsuf and we worked the Kadesh. We were working down the south. We were going through the south, through the Sinai, south of Eretz Yisrael, or it was Canaan at the time. So we needed to get to Canaan somehow. So first we asked Edom, would you mind if we passed through your land? And they said, absolutely not. We then asked Moab, would you mind? And they said, absolutely not. Now, we could not attack Edom or Moab because of, we had treaties there, right? Right? Edom was the treaty that Yaakov made with Esav. Right? Edom means the descendants of Esav. And Moav is the descendant of Lot. Right? So again, Avram and Lot had an agreement. So both Moav, and who was Moav's brother? No, that's Peretz's brother. Yes, young lady? Amon, correct. Right, so Amon and Moab also, right, they were the descendants of Lot through Lot's daughters, actually, right? So therefore, again, there was an agreement, no war there. So if we asked them to go through and they said no, that was the end of it. However, Sichon afterwards, we didn't have any familial relationships, and when they tried it, it didn't turn out that well. Now remember, Amon was someone that we could not attack. However, the Gemara tells us, and this is almost clear in the Pesukim, that Amon u'Moav tiro b'Sichon, that prior to Bnei Yisrael going through, there was a war where Sichon, Melech Cheshbon, attacked Amon and Moav and took over it. Now we believe that there is a concept called Kibush Mochama, meaning that the way it's generally explained is, fine, if I go and I throw you out of your house, that's illegal. If America goes throws Canada out of Canada, it's ours. Right? There are certain things as right of war. If in a war one country conquers another country, it becomes part of that country. Right? Interestingly, so there is a discussion in the Gemara Megillah regarding the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara said that there was twice we were Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael. Once in the time of Yehoshua, we conquered Canaan. Then the second time in the time of Ezra, we were given it back. So the general assumption among most Rishonim is that Kedusha Rishona, Kitcha L'Shaita V'lo Kitcha L'Asad Lavov, that the original Kedusha was only for amount of time. And when the first base of Midrash was destroyed and we were thrown out, it lost the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. However, the Kedusha Shnia, when we went back in the time of Ezra and took over, that's Kitcha L'Shaita V'Kitcha L'Asad Lavov, meaning that Kedusha remains forever. So what's the difference between it? So Rav Shechter likes to point out that the difference is how we took over. We took over the first time through war. It became ours, but just like we took over by war, we could lose it by war. Right? Just like we had a right to throw someone else, the next people had a right to throw us out. And that was the end of it. I suppose the second time where it was gifted to us, that cannot be changed. It wasn't that we got it one way. So therefore, the Kedusha that we set up at that point was a more permanent Kedusha. Right, that is why we believe that there is Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael to this day. Right, that's why we keep Trumas and Maestras, and we have Shemitah coming up next year, because we believe that there is a certain level of Kedusha. So what happened was, Sichon takes over Amon and Moab. It's not Amon and Moab anymore. It is now Sichon. Sichon we can fight against. So that's how ultimately we got control of Amon and Moab, through that war. So Yiftach says, let's get Mr. Amon, let's get things in order here. Let's get the story straight. Right? What happened was, you lost your country, we took it over from them, it's over. You know, you have what you have now, be happy with it. Pasuk Yichas, Vayelach Bamidbar, Vayosef es Eretz Edom, es Eretz Moav. So we went around Edom and Moav. Vayavo mimizvah Shemes Eretz Moav. Vayachanun be'ever Arnon, v'lobo b'gvul Moav, ki Arnon gvul Moav. We did not go into Moav at all. As promised, we did not go into Edom. Rather, we went to Nachal Arnon. And again, Vayishlach Yisrael malochim el sicho melech ha'amori, melech cheshbon, Vayomer lo Yisrael nabr nabr atzcha ad mekomi. Would you mind if we pass through peacefully to get where we're going? They did not allow us to pass through. Rather, we were attacked by Sichon. Vayitein Adonai Elohei Yisrael es Sichon ves kol amo v'yad Yisrael v'yakum v'yirash Yisrael es kol eretz ha'amori yoshev ha'aretz ha'im. And in fact, once we were attacked, we fought back and we won the entire area that we have now. So don't tell us that we attacked you, right? We asked to pass through peacefully, you attacked us, you lost. It's over. And with that, we got everything from Arnon to Yabok, from the Midbar to the Yarden, the entire area of what is now Gilad, right, what we would call now the east bank of the Jordan, which was the Eretz Gad, Reuven, and Chatzi Sefer Menashe. We won in that war. Right. That's how it happened. There's a little bit of discussion, we'll just mention it quickly, we won't read it inside. Number two is, the Ramban is a little unclear as to whose land this was originally. Did this fall under the Lot Treaty, did it fall under a different treaty? But overall, the presentation that it was land that we couldn't go into without the help of Sichon remains. But it's only Yiftach saying is this isn't a good argument. Ultimately, we never took over anything from Amon for sure, and any taking over we did was in defense. So there's no real claim that you have against us. Pasuk Chav Gimel. V'ata Adonai Elohei Yisrael Horish Esohamri Hamri B'nei Amo Yisrael V'ata Tirashenu. And now our God has given this all of it to us, and you want it back? Halo Eis Asher Yorishcha Kemosh Elohecha Ososi Rosh. Beis kol asher horish Adonai Eloheinu miponenu oso nirash. So whatever your God Kamosh gave you, that's yours, and whatever our God gave us, that's ours. It's a very odd statement, right? So if you look at the Meshach Chachma in the Haftarah of Chukas number 3 on the source sheet. But of Atah Hashem, it says, Horish es Hashem Yorishcha Kamosh Elohecha Oso Sirash. Maybe we say Elohecha because that's not referring to Hashem, it's referring to Avodah Zarah. Nizam Miloma es Hashem Horishcha Shelo Yite Mamash Avodah Zarah. Rak Omba Shelofi Ta'usla es Hashem Yorishcha Kamosh Oso Sirash. So the Meshach Chachma is clear. It's not saying that the reason you won what you won is because of your God. He said, listen, you believe in your God. You believe your God gave you a certain amount of land. You have that land. Good. Our God gave us our land. You know, we have our land. You stay on your side of the border. We stay on our side of the border. Good fences make good neighbors. Goodbye. That was his general approach that he was trying to sell here. It didn't work. Chafei v'atov, v'atah hatov, tov atah mibolak, ben sipor melech moav, harav rav, im Yisrael, im ilachem uchambam. Are you better than Balak, who tried to take us down? Tried fighting, he didn't even bother trying to fight us. Right? When Balak, right, the king of Moab, who was a powerful king, wanted to fight, what did he do? He hired Bilam. Right? He tried whatever other trick, because he knew that he couldn't beat Bnei Yisrael militarily. So too, be smart. Don't start up with us, you know. Don't bother us, and we won't do to you what we did to him. B'shem Yisrael b'cheshbon b'vnoseh v'arorer v'vnoseh v'chol ha'arim asher al yidei Arnon shrosh me'el shona madu alo yitalto b'esahim. This is 300 years ago already. All these years you didn't bother us. We've all been happy. Why are you looking for a war here? Beyond the scope here a little bit, but the story told over by Yiftach is not the exact story that we have in Chukas. Give one example, there's no mention in Chukas at any point that we asked Moab if they can go through. And that was added here. So, the general approach, this is even Ben Katz, who is quick to make trouble, would agree that this is true. we discussed it at Parshat Chukas. Is that Yiftach filling in the story here? It's not two different versions. There's no contradictions between the two. It's a matter of, you know, the basic overview was given in Chukas. We're getting more of it here. Chavzayin, v'anochi locha tosi loch, v'ata ose iti ro'o lihilochem bi, yishpod anai ha-shofet hayom, bein b'nei Yisrael, bein b'nei Amon. Said, now you're starting a war here, I did nothing to instigate it, God will see who's right. As expected, v'lo shaman melech b'nei Amon el divrei Yiftach asher shalach ilav. The melech Amon paid no heed to it, which sets up the background for a war. Latihi al Yiftach ruach Adonai vayavor es Gilad ves Menashe vayavor es mitzvei Gilad avar bnei Amon. So he said, okay, we're going to have a war. I'm not going to wait for them. Okay, just to get a little bit of the lay of the land, you have what's today Jordan, right? He's in mitzvei Gilad, or even further to the west, so he's close to the Jordan. Amon is obviously on the other side. I guess what would be something like Syria nowadays. So instead of waiting for them to come marching through and doing damage to Menashe, he takes all of his armed forces and goes up to the border. And at the border, he's going to meet them. Here's the famous part. Pasuk Lamed. Vayidor Yiftach Neder Adonai Vayomar Im Nasonti Tenes Bnei Amon Diyadi. He says, yeah, I want to do something to show God that I appreciate what he does. In the event that we have this many times before Bnei Israel would go out to war, they would make a neder. Right? For example, in the event that we win this war, everything that we accomplish, that we conquer, will go to the Beis HaMikdash. Right? All the animals will be karbanos. That is standard. So he decides he's going to do something of that sort. Right? And he announces that everything that the first thing that comes out of my door is going to be a karban. In hindsight, a very bad idea. Not the first person to make a similar mistake, I should just point out. If you remember the story of Achan, when Bnei Yisrael, in the time of Yehoshua, conquer Yericho, there is an issue, and it becomes clear that somebody, namely Achan, has taken from the spoils. And Yehoshua said that all the spoils should be Hekdesh. And ultimately he's put to death for that. The Mefarshim of the Gemara makes clear that this was a mistake of Yehoshua. Yehoshua should have never made that neder. Now this idea, obviously he had the best of intentions, but he should have realized that this could happen. Had he not made the neder, Achan would have never done what he did, and there wouldn't have been a loss of life to Bnei Israel, etc., etc. So here too, this is a misplaced neder, as we will see. Rabbi Beis, go to the war. Vayavor yiftach el b'nei Amon lirachem bam vayinem adnoi biyodom. And Yiftach goes out to fight, and God gives over Bnei Amon over to the hands of Yiftach. Vayake me'arorer v'ad bo'acha minis, esrim ir v'ad ovel kramim, ma'ko gedolah me'od, v'yichonu Bnei Amon mipnei Bnei Yisrael. Wipes out 20 cities, gives the places where they were, and ultimately at that point Amon announced that they will be subservient to Bnei Yisrael. The threat is gone. Good. That was a pretty quick war, only two psukim. Wars go, that was a quick one. Because we want to get back to the main story. Vayavo yiftach ha-mitzpeh el beiso. V'ine vito yotzeis l'kroso besupim umim cholos. Raki yechida. V'ein lo mimenu bein obas. So who is the first thing that comes out the door? His daughter. It's his only daughter. There's no other son, no other daughter. She comes out to greet him, and he realizes we've got problems. Vayi chir oso osa, vayi kro es begodov, vayomer.
One question. First it said that she was his only child, and it said that there were no sons with him. Why is that so contentious?
What?
It said that she was his only child.
Right.
And the next slide said, and they no bar.
I think it's a matter of translating the word yichida. I think the word.
That's a dramatic.
What? It could be, but reading forward, that you'll see that can't be. It's not because he has grandchildren, but there's an emphasis on the fact that she was never married. So it could be emphasis, could be to make it clear. It also could mean that. Could be discussing that he had more than one wife. He might be emphasizing that not just only to this mother, perhaps the only child, period.
Well, Shemfino actually
says, well, they say
it's a favorite child. So
maybe
that's why they have a favorite. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Best way.
I didn't see that
till
after.
Yeah. We understand. Pasuk Lamed Hey, we're back to. Vayhi kir oso. Osa vayikra es begadav vayomer ahaviti hachreya hichratini v'at yisak be'ochri v'anochi potsisi fi el Adonai v'rouch al-vashov. So he rips his clothing and says, oh my goodness, my dear daughter, I've done something terribly wrong and you're the problem. I have made right? I have spoken to God and now I can't back out. Batomer love of the Patisa as Picha Adonai, a Seri Kashe Yotami Picha, Achare Asher Osso, Leho Adonai, Nakamos Mayavahu Beamon. She says, whatever you told God, that's what you should do. After all, He helped you be victorious against Bnei Amon. Batomer El Avia, Ye Oseri Hadavar Hazer. Harpeni menish naim chadoshim ve'alchav yirati el al harim va'evkeh al besulai anochi v'reyosai. She says, the only thing I ask is just give me 2 months, I will go to the mountains and I will cry over the fact that I will never get married, have children, I will go with some of my friends. Vayomer lechi vayishlach oso shnei chadoshim te'achi v'reyoseha v'teif al besuleho al heharim. And in fact, he grants the wish, and that's what happens. Vayimi keit shnayim chadoshim v'toshev el haviha v'yaslo es nidro asher nadar v'hi lo yada ish v'tihi chok l'vi Yisrael. And in fact, at the end, he did what he promised to do, and she never got married. Obviously, that's a little bit of an odd pasuk. She also never ate breakfast again, if he really did what he promised. And the focus that she didn't get married, that's not a major focus at all. Yeah, a lot of other things she didn't do, assuming that we take it literally.
Literally that what? That
yeah. So, that pasuk begins to indicate that perhaps we do not have to read this literally. Right? The fact that he said, and therefore she never got married... Right.
Well, that's what because she keeps going and she says, I'm going to mourn the fact that I'm a virgin.
Right.
That's, if you read it literally, that she's not saying I'm mourning that you're going to kill me.
Right, but that's strange, you know.
It is strange.
The whole part.
You know, so just to be killed, also not to continue your life. In other words, you don't have to take it physical. There's also a different kind of death, not to be able to have children, to procreate the world, to continue.
So you're indicating, in your opinion, that she was perhaps not killed. The problem with that is, so how was he mashalim his nether? He said, I will bring her as a carbon. And that does seem to indicate a certain amount of slitting of the throat. Oh, that's a good point you make. So there are different opinions here. Let's just take a look at...
like the view.
Right. Now, human sacrifice is not something that we strongly support. I'm willing to go on the record for that. Right? So let's take a look. There are many different approaches. We have two of them in the source sheets. Perhaps we'll see some of them in the... So looking at the Mefarshim, a lot of the Mefarshim are of the opinion that she was not killed. Right? And in fact, there is a certain vagueness to the words, right? He doesn't say, you know, Tekreveha lekarban, or Taleha le'olah. It doesn't say anything like that. What does it say? Bayas lo es nidro asher nadar. Right, he did that which he swore to do. So that's one thing. The second point, which we have to discuss a little bit, is why couldn't he get out of this? Right? Whatever happened to Hataras Nedarim? Right, just to review. Right? So people make a netter sometimes. It happens. Right? So this is the classic case. So I've gotten in my day a few questions about people who make neder and want out. So this is the classic. The classic is the young lady who went to seminary. And in seminary she became very, very religious. Very religious. So she has now taken upon herself that she will stand through laning every Shabbos. And years later she realizes that matos masei is a solid 250 psukim. It comes out in the summer when it's hot, and she's in her ninth month of pregnancy with twins. Okay, let's just say. So she realizes that had she considered this while she was in seminary, perhaps she wouldn't have taken the netter. Right? So the general rule is, assuming that there's charata, meaning if the person regrets what they did, and a pesach, and if there's something out there that had they realized it at the time, they wouldn't have accepted the neder, so you have a right to do hataras nedarim. You can say, you know, obviously when you spoke, you didn't mean to accept it at the time, and therefore you are absolved. Clearly finding charata and a pesach was not difficult here. Right? Clearly, Charata, the Pasuk said he ripped his clothes the minute he saw her. And Pesach was, obviously, he did not consider this possibility. Had he considered the possibility, he would have said, the first animal that came out of my, he would have said, you know, I hereby offer five goats, you know, a cow, you know, two oxen to be named later. He would have come up with something, you know, but just to come out and say this, clearly this is a situation where he could have gotten out of it. And even if he wasn't the biggest Talmud Chacham, which he clearly wasn't, somebody should have told him this. So let's take a first look at the Medrash in Bechukosai, out of all places, discussing Ish Ki Yafli. This is talking about Nedarim. Preet Tzadik Eitzchayim Volkeach Nefoshos Chacham. That's a pasuk in Mishlei. Zeh HaTorah, Shemitok Shehu Ben Torah, Hu Omid Hechokeach Nefoshos. Because by learning Torah, you can save lives. Because that he did not know any Torah, he ended up costing the life of his daughter. Amasai, when did this happen? He was fought with Bnei Amon, he made another Shnemar, Yiftach Neder Hashem. Etc., we know the rest. But also Shah Kasalav HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God was not pleased with this account. Amar Kosh Baruch Hu, Ilu Yotze Mi Beis El Kelev O Chazir O Gamal Yakriv Lefanai. Unless you're the first one that runs out to a dog or a pig or a camel, I'm going to get a carbon out of that. That's not what we want here. Zimel Akash Baruch Hu Bito. Shem made his daughter come out first. And now what are you going to do? Shinamar Vine Bito Yotis Likroso. Vayikiroso Osa. Etc. So the Meshach follow Pinchas HaYasham. Wait a second. Pinchas is still alive. Right? Pinchas is still alive. Why didn't he do Hataras Midorim here and get in, and fix this? So how come Yiftach is saying in the psukim we just read that I can't get out of this? Ela Pinchas Omar Ani Kohen Gadol Ben Kohen Gadol Ashpil Asmi Ve'elach Eitzel Amaretz. Pinchas said, I am the Kohen Gadol, the son of the Kohen Gadol. I'm going to go to him. Him, this Amaretz Yiftach, that's who I'm going to go to. Had he spoken Yiddish? Of course he spoke Yiddish. He was a great man. Right? So that's why that didn't. The Yiftach Amar, Ani Rosh Yiftei Yisrael. I'm the Rosh HaMemshalah. Rosh HaKatzinim. I'm the commander-in-chief. Ashkel Asim Ve'eloch Eitzel Hedjot. I'm going to go to a Kohen? To a regular guy? The Bein Shneim of the Hahu Aluva. Ushneim Naskaivu B'Domeh. Because the two of them couldn't work this out, the young woman was lost, and they both had to pay for this. Pinchas nistak l'men ruach hakodesh. Pinchas lost ruach hakodesh. Yiftach nisfazu atzmosav. Yiftach got some from what we would call now his left ear seed that his limbs fell off one at a time. Shenemar v'yikaver b'arei ha-gilad. Next parakeh says he was buried in arei gilad, plural. In fact, he was buried in several places. Indicates that he had this issue. Amr lo bita. So what happened here? Avi shem eksiv b'torah sheyikrav nefashos b'neiim al gabi mizbeach. Excuse me, Dad. Human sacrifice. That's part of it. Halok siv adam ki yakrav mikem korban l'shem mina behema mina bakar mina tzon. It's clear in the Torah when you bring a carbon, it has to be from the behema, from the bakar, or from the tzon. It has to be animals, not peoples. Min avehema v'lov min b'nei adam. Amar biti nadarti v'hayayotze. He said, he's got a point, but the bottom line is I did it. So she responded to him. Amar lo, Yaakov avinu shenada, kol asher titin liyaser aser nulach. Min pashas v'yishrach, right? Yaakov makes a neder to Hashem that I'm going to give 10% tithe, right, of everything that you give to me. He was given 12 sons. You think you have to give 1.2 kids to as a carbon? I don't think so. And seriously, when Chana prays to have a son, he said, I'm going to give it over to Hashem. Would anyone think that meant a carbon? That she was going to kill her son? It's ridiculous. So his daughter made all of these quite cogent arguments, but he would not listen. So she says, do me a favor, let me go to Beis Din and discuss this with them. So that was, we were literally, give me 2 months so I can go to the mountains. The Medrash says does not mean that, right? Amar Rav Levi ben Brecha, v'chiyesh adam yored al harim. There seems to be a problem. It says, I want to go down to the mountains. You don't go down to mountains. You go down to valleys, you go up to mountains. V'olav al harim, elamav yoradti al harim, elu asanhedrin shemar shimu harim esriv Hashem. When he talked to harim, harim means allegorically, this is referring to the Sanhedrin. Believe it or not, they couldn't find a way out of it. Which is because Yiftach, in the next parak, will kill people when he probably shouldn't have. Therefore, Hashem stepped in and stopped Sanhedrin from figuring out this obvious way out. So Hashem stepped in to make sure that they could not answer even the simplest of questions as a punishment to Yiftach. The Medrash takes the story literally. Even everything up until now was seen allegorically. The Medrash assumes that she was actually killed.
But he committed the
error,
not she. So
doesn't it say that children are not punished for the sins of the fathers? That's one answer, but there's no reason to believe that she continued in the way of her father. Right? So again, taking it literally, the Midrash is very difficult. It is absolutely very difficult. Yiftach, you think this is what I really wanted? I never even thought of this. When Avram tried to do this, I told him not. By Avram, I just wanted to make a point, but Kayashri kill, we would never want anything like that. So therefore, that's the Medrash take of this very sad story. Most Rishonim don't take it literally at all. Most Rishonim cannot believe that it would be possible that she was put to death, but rather the idea that she was sent to the mountains, the idea being that there are a lot of people out there who are kachoshev kemes, as we say. Ani chashav kemes. Somebody who doesn't have any money is considered poor. A mitzora, someone who has tzaras, is chashav kemes. A blind person, who more tells us, is chashav kemes. Right? So another potential reason reading would be that someone without children is considered ace, right? What does Rachel say to Yaakov? Im ayin meisan ochi. If I don't have children, I'm as good as dead. Right? And to a certain extent, we take that literally. It's very interesting that in the story of Chana. So Chana, the Gemara tells us, threatened Eli HaKohen. And she said, listen, either you daven for me, I have children, or I have another option. What's the option? The option is, I'm going to make myself into a sota. Right? What's a sota? If a husband suspects his wife that perhaps she did something wrong, that he told her not to be alone with a man, and someone comes along and testifies she was alone with that man, they go to the Beis HaMikdash. And there's an entire process that we read about in Parshas Naso, and at the end of the process, she drinks the water. If she wasn't faithful, she has an unhappy, very unglorious ending. And if not, the Nizra Zera. And Gemara tells us, Rashi quotes it, that Nizra Zera means that if she wasn't having children beforehand, she was having children now. So she said, I'll do it. I'll make my husband jealous. I'll do what I was supposed to. I'll be alone with a man. I won't do anything with the man. And that's it. So we can do this the easy way or the hard way. So the question is, well, wait a second. Is that really an option? I mean, by doing this purposely, for starters, you have an issue of yichud. You can't be alone with a man. Problem number one. So you work it out somehow. But problem number two is the shame Hashem, the shame of Mepharish is going to be destroyed. Right? It's going to be put into the water and it'll be destroyed that way. Can she cause that to happen? No? Mechikas Hashem is an Avera also. So the Netziv writes, in his tshuvas actually, that the answer is that, yeah, we take the statement of Rachel somewhat literally. Im ayin meisanochi, that the psychological difficulty for a woman not to have children is such, it's somewhat on the level of death. So therefore, to avoid that, she was allowed to do this Avera. It's a very strong statement. So most people assume that's what happened, that the daughter of Yiftach went into seclusion, and she spent the rest of her life being Oved Hashem, and she never got married. And that does fit in with the flow somewhat better. We'll just take a quick look at the Ramban. I think we're over time, and I have a 12 o'clock here, and I'm late too. but we'll do it nonetheless. The Ramban discusses this standard opinion. Okay. we'll just finish up quickly. Zaya Ta'usho Sheyiftach Bevita. Ki Choshev Kasher Charem Chayim Negid Yisrael Chol V'Kayim Rahamis Anoshim O Ha'over Acharam O'Chay V'Misa. So he was only why. So the Ramban says the reason that Yiftach did not think he could undo this is because there are certain things, certain public vows that cannot be done undone through Hataras Nedarim. So he thought, so since he was the general and he made a statement during a time of war, that could not be undone. Similarly, somewhat to the story of Shaul and Yonasan. Right? If you remember, Shaul said, no one's allowed to eat for the rest of the day. Yonasan didn't hear it. Yonasan ends up eating. There was a question about putting him to death. So he thought it was the same idea. The Ramban explains that this was incorrect because, in fact, only something that relates to the war you can't back out on. This was a netter that did not relate to the war itself. It was around the war. He made it beforehand about something that's going to happen afterwards. That's the first Ramban. Secondly, he goes on to explain a little bit more. So we'll just read the last few lines. Ukafi mishpatei Torah ein biyad adam sheyidor biyotze pesach beisu yepurushim she ein biyad lezhamim ola. Also, he said that this netter could have never worked. You can't have a netter to kill somebody. I swear I'm going to kill you. Then you try talking to me. I said, sorry, I promised. Sounds crazy, but it happened in the Torah. You know once, right? It's the story of anybody? Eliphaz, right? Eliphaz's father tells him, go kill Yaakov. And Yaakov says, you really shouldn't kill people. So they come up with this idea that he'll take all his money from him. And then Ani Chashiv Kameis. They come up with some shtickle Torah to get it out of it.
Oh, yeah, right?
What?
Right, with the brothers.
Right, also. So these are possibilities. V'dalkim ha'isa b'isa ha'bocha al b'sulev re'aseh. Ima kazonos l'kalo says, Esmer, l'chas v'shom, sh'yiyye chok b'yisrael, l'sanos l'vaisal arba s'yom r'bashan, v'nei sh'lo nises l'bal, v'haisa o'vedes as Hashem b'tara. Havo adov k'shuto v'tauso, ha'yimim masha marti. So he says that even though he understands the other opinions out there, that in fact this didn't happen literally, he says, he thinks this last pasuk, which says that Benos Yisrael used to go out every year for four days to cry over her, if she was merely single, no, it's a terrible thing, but you know, to have it set up like this, the Ramban thought that would not be right. Therefore, the Ramban actually takes the opinion that it's literal, that he was wrong to do it, 100%, but he takes the story of her being killed as literal. Still, even though the Ramban and the Medrash take it literally, as we saw, I still believe that the large majority of the opinions do not assume that way, but rather assumes that she went out on her own into the mountains and basically was left there. Okay, till next week.